broadcasting live from London every Friday from 9 to 11 p.m., 4 to 6 Eastern. The Soul Seekers bring you the latest topics and the most influential guests in the paranormal world right here on Para-X Radio.
This is James Riley from Ballistic Etna, and you are listening to the best in everything paranormal on Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio.
Check out our website at soulseekers.org.uk.
This is the Para-X Radio Network.
Hi, Kurt Smith here, telling you to listen to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio, Friday evenings, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Para-X Radio Network.
Good evening to everybody. Welcome to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio. I'm Gil, your host. With me is Sarah Jane in the chat room. And tonight we've got a very special guest. He is Dr. Ed Kraft, the original anomalist. Ed served in the U.S. Army with a secret clearance as a volunteer soldier with the U.N. Joint Security Task Force, among many other positions and locations in the military. Ed's had his first unusual encounter with a hairy creature in South Florida, which I'm sure he'll tell all of you listeners about. And he's had many encounters and investigations into the paranormal, from UFOs, unexplained lights, ghost hunting, among cryptozoology. And his experience in this is very vast, and we look forward to talking to Ed, and I'm sure all of our listeners are very excited to hear what he has to say. Ed, are you with us tonight?
I sure am, Gil. Glad to be here tonight. Great show. Great audience out there. I've listened a few times, and I'm real happy to be with you tonight. Oh, today, rather.
Yeah.
Tonight, I guess, over where you're at, but it's daytime here where I'm at.
It's just after 9 o'clock here in London, so we're really excited to have you on. Thanks so much for spending some time with us tonight. I think the first thing that we should clear up is what exactly is an anomalist?
Well, anomalist, it's one of those things, it's a label. We all like those. We all like to put little labels on things. So.
Right.
Since what I do is a little out of the ordinary for most people in this field, I cover such a wide range of things. And it's a word or a label that kind of encompasses all of those things. But for lack of a better way of putting it, an anomalist is basically someone who researches phenomenon that deviates from that which basically varies from the known contemporary scientific disciplines.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and this can include, but is not limited to, UFOs, electronic voice phenomenon, ghosts, cryptozoology, mm-hmm. NDEs or near-death experiences to spontaneous human combustion, any of those phenomenon, any phenomenon that is not known or deviates from what is known to contemporary scientific disciplines.
I gotcha. Okay. Now, do you specialize in one phenomena more than any of the others, or do you try and research as many possible phenomena that you can?
Well, again, these are all phenomena that are not known, recognized by modern science. So anything outside of that definition falls into that category.
Right, right.
No, I specialize in them all.
All
because
of them.
They do fall outside of that norm.
Right, right.
Okay. So, It's like the term paranormal, for mm-hmm. instance. Most people like that word paranormal.
Right.
To me, that's an oxymoron. The word paranormal means outside the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an oxymoron. Anything outside the norm is abnormal.
True. That's very true.
So it's an oxymoron. Paranormal is an oxymoron. So that's why I consider myself an anomalist.
Okay.
Okay.
Gotcha. Let's go back into your personal history a little bit and what you've done and then how you got into being an anomalist.
Actually, that goes way back. I started out like everybody else as a kid. You know, I had a fascination for it. I think we're all a little warped as kids somehow, some way, or we wouldn't be doing this as adults.
Right.
I mean, we've got to look at it from that perspective. I think we're all sick, little, twisted kids. That's how we grow up and be sick, twisted adults. And we end up doing this. And that I was no exception to the rule. I mean, I grew up and I was fascinated by, the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
I loved ghosts. I loved the ghost stories, the strange and unusual. But I think what clinched it for me was, as a kid, I had an experience and an encounter with something I could not explain.
Mm-hmm.
But even prior to that, I found myself interested in things like science. I was always the science geek, the little geeky kid.
Uh-huh.
I really didn't have glasses and run around like that with a pocket protector and all. No, but I was a little geeky kid, the little sci-fi kid.
20 pounds in your
buddies,
pocket.
Yeah, me and my buddy would go down, ride our bikes, and we'd spend time at the library. I know a lot of listeners nowadays out there, some of these younger listeners, don't realize what a library is. That's the big building with all the books in it. I know everybody thinks that it's that little a box sitting on the little box that sits on your desk is the only thing that you can read nowadays, but there are actually buildings that contain things called books. Okay, and that's called a library. And that's where we used to do our research back in my day. And that's what I would do as a kid. I would go down there to this big building, and I would look up information, and they had a section in it,
mm-hmm.
which at the time was a very, very small section. It was actually just a few shelves, our little bookcase, which had a little section of books in it on strange phenomenon.
Huh.
And, there's people like Hans Holzer and a few cryptozoologists mm-hmm. back then, and they were just, Joe Blows back in the day.
Right.
And a few fringe archaeologists and sociologists and things that wrote about these strange creatures that they would go looking for.
Right.
Like Bigfoot at the time, which was just being named Bigfoot or Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would read about. Me and my buddy would go down there, and we would go to that section, and they had things on microfish back then, and that's another thing that people don't realize exists. They're little books on film,
exactly.
You put it in this machine, and you would look into it, and you could read what was on there. And old newspaper articles, they would store them on microfiche, and we'd sit there for hours and hours and go through all this stuff.
Cool. I have.
And that's what I would do. I'd spend my time doing that, and that got me interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's after I had my little, experience
right.
as a kid, as a Boy Scout.
Right.
And that occurred here in Florida, in the woods, back in the swamps, which we can get into as we go along and go into that a little later on as we talk about cryptozoology.
Sure.
We can get into some of that as we go along later on, and then I'll go into some more detail on that one. But that's basically how I got my start. I spent the time, took the time, and just had an interest to learn more about this from a scientific standpoint. I wanted to research. I wanted to really dig my hands, get my feet wet,
sure,
so to speak, and really sink my teeth into it. And that's what piqued my interest, and it just grew from there.
Right. I was the same way. I was never really into ghosts, but I grew up in northern Michigan, way out in the boonies. I mean, our closest neighbor was probably a mile away, and it was dark and, you know, surrounded by swampland, and I was just fascinated by Bigfoot. That was it for me. I was obsessed with Bigfoot, and I swore that he lived somewhere in the woods around my house. And, you know, we had a horse barn, and I'd hate to go out there after dark because I swore that Bigfoot was waiting inside there and he was going to pounce on me or something. But and then when there was a Bigfoot sighting not too far from my house, that really did it. And I just was obsessed even more. And then it was UFOs after that. And then that's when I had my first ghostly experience when I was in high school. But that's how I got started, being interested in the paranormal, quote unquote.
Yeah, I always have to put that para part in quotation marks. Everybody asks me about that. And it's like, I'm sorry, I can't bring myself to put the two terms together without the quotes.
Well, did you want to tell us about your experience that
sure, we can go into that. In fact, I just did a shooting with Josh Gates. He was just here at the house, and we just did a shooting for Destination Truth. It'll be out sometime on the next season.
Uh-huh.
And we were just discussing it. I was a young kid. I was about 13, 14 years old here, and it was in the swamps here in Florida,
mm-hmm,
off of Alligator Alley. And that's a big stretch of highway that runs east and west.
Sure. Back when it was a two-lane road, I remember that.
Exactly. Yeah. You're familiar with the area down here.
Oh, yeah.
And, it was two-lane at the time. Now it's four-lane and a big mess.
Right.
For some reason, they want to charge you going one way and not the other.
I know. I never understood
that. Don't ask me
why.
Toll roads are funny here in Florida. But anyway, that's a whole other story. But at the time, it was two-lane. And now it's convenient because they have an area where you can go under the wildlife goes under the road.
Right.
Culverts running under the roads, and wildlife can cross underneath, and they got fences, so wildlife can't cross over the roads, and it doesn't get hit. It's safe for the wildlife.
Right.
Back then it wasn't, and you had areas you could turn off of, and we were going camping, and Scoutmaster had a buddy who lived off the highway there, and he had some property way back off in the swamp, in the hammock back off of the highway, mm-hmm, back in the Everglades. And there's an area where we turned off and parked just off of the highway,
mm-hmm,
and met him, his buddy there, who picked us up in a swamp buggy and drove us way back out in the swamp, and which was fun in and of itself. Those things are amazing.
Yeah,
if you ever get a chance to go to Florida, ride a swamp buggy. You don't get on an airboat, ride a swamp buggy. Anyway, we're back there. We're having a great time. That evening rolls around. We're all goofing off on the back porch, which is, of course, screened in.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who's been in a swamp at night knows you must have a screen. You can't see out at night. It's pitch black out there. All the lights are on the inside, not the outside. The shower's on the outside. I'm last man in line. I think the guys are messing with me when I hear this god-awful noise out there.
Huh.
And I'm giving you the abbreviated version in case you can't tell, because I've told the story so many times, so I'm turning blue in the face. But what essentially happens is I think the guys are messing with me. I peek out there, and here comes this bipedal hairy thing across the back of the hammock.
Hmm.
It's not human.
Really?
It's as simple as that.
How tall was it? How big was it?
Now, what it was, I still don't have an answer to that question to this day. And that's why I do the research I do.
Mm-hmm.
I have ideas as to what it might have been, but I still haven't found an answer as to what that actually was.
Mm-hmm.
I have an hypo- I have an hypothesis, formed a hypothesis as to what it potentially could have been.
Mm-hmm.
But to this day, can I definitively say that that was a human being or an ape or a swamp ape? Or, you know, do I have proof as to what that was? No, I do not. And until I do, I'm not going to stop looking for that answer.
Right.
Until I have scientific proof as to what it was. I know it existed, but until I have scientific proof as to what it was, I'm not going to stop looking for that answer.
Has there been other reported sightings of that same or similar creature in the area down there?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up on me.
Has there been other similar reportings like yours of the same type of creature in that area?
I caught the last part of that.
Must be the Skype. Must be having a bad connection. Has there been other reports of what you saw similar to your sighting by other people down there?
Yes. In fact, the creature's been sighted throughout the state of Florida. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There have been many sightings of the creature throughout the state of Florida. And there's many names for this particular creature. It's known as a swamp ape.
Right.
But there are many, many sightings of it, and it has many different names. For instance, it goes by the name of the swamp monkey, the swamp ape, Everglades ape, the abominable swamp man, the weed island monster, Old Harry, the Jalapa monster, there's the Barden booger, there's the Okeechobee ogre, the the Farvilla gorilla. The thing's been seen all over the state, but basically it's described as being about 600 pounds and about 8 feet tall. The creature I saw, I guesstimated to be about, and got to remember, I'm looking back at 14 years old. I'm not exactly a tall person
right at
that age, and I'm terrified. I'm sitting out there naked as a jaybird, and I'm stinking the place up. It did smell, but of course I smelled, and so did the swamp.
Right.
That's why
right.
I was in the shower. And but I'm looking at it against the sawgrass, which is pretty tall.
Sure.
And so I'm guessing it to be about 5 feet tall. So, you know, this was not a large, large creature. This was definitely wasn't 8 feet tall.
Right.
But, you know, it could have been a juvenile. And you have to look back at the fact that even the Miccosukee Indians did talk a lot about tribes of mangrove people, what they called mangrove people. So there's a long history, even dated back to the Miccosukee, of these animals.
Okay.
And actual tribes of what they called the mangrove people, hairy mangrove people.
Oh, I didn't know that. I wasn't aware of that. Now,
actually, back in the 1800s, there was a pioneer by the name of John Tanner who found a burial site in East Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
In which the bones that were recovered that he actually found there contained Niga leg bones, which were just from the kneecap down,
mm-hmm.
were actually the size of an entire human leg.
No kidding.
Normal size human leg. He said the skull caps were so large you could actually fit over, they actually fit over his entire head.
Wow.
So these whatever happened to the bones, I have no clue. But,
right.
You know, looking back in the 1800s, so. But there are, you know, official reports and so forth throughout the state of Florida, and they do date way back. And there's a long lineage of tales and stories. There are even some totems and so forth as far as the Native Americans that
mm-hmm.
live here. And it is a part of their folklore as well. So the creature's been around a long time, whatever it is.
And I'm sure a lot of people are probably thinking the same thing. It sounds very similar to Bigfoot sightings.
Yes. Yes, in a lot of respects it does. However, there are some sightings, for instance, the Mayakan skunk ape, which looks very suspicious, like an orangutan.
Hmm.
And I don't for a minute doubt that it is an orangutan. And there are several sightings and photographs of creatures down here that look suspiciously like apes. And I believe very wholeheartedly that a lot of them are apes.
Right.
because you have to remember, there are actually primate care facilities here
mm-hmm.
and rescue facilities here in South Florida because it is a subtropical climate.
Sure.
We do have ports of call here,
mm-hmm.
in which exotic animals are being brought into the country. We have zoos. We have some of the best zoos and care facilities in the nation here.
Yeah, Miami Zoo is awesome.
So what happens is these animals come in, we have hurricanes, and they get loose.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are not recovered, and they don't make it a point to panic the public by saying, oops, you didn't get that gorilla back. Bar your doors. You know, they don't really want mass panic. They quietly and discreetly send little state people out there to look for these animals. They
right.
go knocking on the door, creating mass hysteria and panic.
Right. But that could explain the recent sightings, but if it goes back to the Miccosukee tribes and, like you said, back to the 1800s, there was no zoos back then and no, you know, shipping ports back then, so...
Exactly. So what we have is, what I think we have, well, actually, we did have ships coming over. You have to remember, you had pirates docking here for the longest, and you
sure.
did have seafaring ships coming back and forth, but I think what we do have here is a combination of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are these animals out there, and they did exist, we could have a combination of things. We could have hybrid animals out there.
Sure.
We could have these creatures inbreeding with these other exotic animals.
Yeah, that's very possible.
I mean, there are animals that are not native to, for the instance, we have iguanas
mm-hmm.
that are not native to South Florida. They're native to South and Central America, and they're breeding like rabbits here.
No kidding.
They're all over the place, and there's localized populations of them here. Drive down and see them sitting sunning next to any canal.
Huh.
All over the place.
And
people get them as pets in other parts of all over the country here. But now they're native to South Florida. They've become native to South Florida
sure.
because they've been released
right.
from... people get them as pets, they turn them loose, and now they're breeding like rabbits. Just like every other exotic animal. We have pythons and other exotic snakes that are doing the same thing out in the Everglades now. They're all over the place. They just released, you and I were talking off air prior to the show about when you were down here and you had you saw the panther. Well,
yes.
We have populations of Florida panther down here that are diminishing. They're endangered. Recently up in Green Swamp, the state came through and released 10 mountain lions to interbreed with them.
Did they?
To try to increase the breeding population. They didn't go telling the public about that because mountain lions are a little more aggressive.
Sure, sure.
But they want to increase the breeding population of the Florida panther.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they've come close to extinction, at least when I lived down there. They were. I don't know what the case is now.
But the reports of strange cats that weren't seen before increased. Well, of course they increased. They didn't announce the fact that they were releasing these 10 mountain lions. So
that'd be an interesting breed, mountain lion and panther.
Well, eventually it's going to, you know, the genetic line will change and, you know, it'll breed itself out. You know, the genes will breed themselves back out because they're only releasing 10 of them.
Right, right. But
you know, it'll be a quick breed, but it's just to increase the overall population of panthers.
Sure.
So, and once they bred, they'll try to recapture them and get them out of there after they've bred.
That was a big problem when Alligator Alley was just a two-lane road, because a lot of the panthers were being hit all the time out there.
Right, and now that it's four-lane, they've put up fences to
right.
Prevent them from... They can't climb over the fences. They've got the curve at the top.
Right.
And what they've done is they've gone under the road
right.
and put culverts so they can actually go under the road.
Yeah.
So it's real nice for the panthers here, but that's another ballgame.
And the alligators.
Yeah, well... they've got kind of different scenarios there for each one of them.
Yeah, I thought that was strange what you and I were talking about before we came on the show. I was telling Ed that I used to go camping in the Everglades. It was either the Everglades or the Keys every weekend, but Friday after work, after being in the race, rat race of Miami, I needed to get away for the weekend, and I was camping out in the Everglades, and I was just driving my four-wheel drive through the swamps, and I just, out of nowhere, came up on this chain-link cage of a black panther with a radio collar on it. And that's all that was there in the middle of nowhere. And I couldn't understand at the time why it would be out there in the middle of nowhere in a cage. You know, just, It didn't seem unhealthy. It didn't seem wounded or injured or anything. But I just found it very strange.
There's a lot of strange things here in Florida too. Not just that, but you mentioned another one too, which was the bunker you found out there.
Yes. Yeah. After the break, I think we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get into the. Well, I was going to say UFOs. It doesn't really relate to that. But when we get back from the break, yeah, we'll go into that a bit more, and maybe you can elaborate and shed some light on what that actually was. Like I told you, I had a good idea what it was, and you've confirmed my ideas. But as far as the swamp creature that you saw, you're still looking for it? Do you go out on the weekends or at any time and still search for this creature?
Yeah, I still go out from time to time and look. Both here and you know, we have different environments as far as swamps go. Everybody thinks that a swamp is a swamp is a swamp.
Mm-hmm.
But you have mangrove swamps, you have cypress swamps, you have the Everglades.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all at different elevations,
right.
You know, sea level. And you have different types of swamps. I mean, their mangrove swamp is a completely different environment. This is what you think of when you think of a marshy type of swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And then cypress swamp is more of a flatland swamp. You can see right across it, and it's marshy, but it's flat. It doesn't have all the overhanging trees, and you have these hammocks that sit up on and are like basically like islands sitting out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely different environments. So you're dealing with, I think, entirely different creatures. And I have had opportunity to be go looking in all of these different environments here in Florida. There are these different swampy environments in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're dealing with various different creatures.
And you've never seen one since?
Well, I have seen a creature since.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw the very last time I saw this creature,
mm-hmm.
I am convinced 100% that it was in a situation in which it was a hoax.
Oh, no kidding.
It was an actual setup. I actually took castings from that particular scenario,
mm-hmm.
and I talked about it on my radio show and actually called the person out because, ironically enough, there were 12. There was a lot more than 12, but at the particular site where I took the casting, there was actually 12 footprints in the one location. We saw them all night long. But at the location where I took the casting, there was actually 12 footprints, but all of them were right feet.
I've heard of two left feet, but 12 right feet.
You know, that speaks for it in and of itself.
Sure.
Right there.
Sure.
And, you know, it would shortly down the road, there was something across the road right in front of us.
Huh. Now, the one that you did see, what happened after you heard the voice and saw, did it just run back up?
It was right across the hammock quickly.
Huh.
And it was out of the thing. And I'm going to be blunt with you. Once it was out of the hammock, I was back in the cabin. The scoutmaster was outside the cabin telling us to get inside the cabin. He was out on the porch, told us to get inside the porch, and he had a gun in his hand.
Oh, he saw it too.
Inside,
then.
And we were out of there. I mean, that camping trip was short lived.
So it wasn't just you that saw it. There was other people.
We were out of there.
No kidding.
That camping trip ended. that was a short lived camping trip.
Did your scoutmaster have any explanation for it?
It wasn't. They didn't say anything else to us about it.
No kidding.
Scoutmaster and his buddy there didn't talk to us about it at all.
That was not
for us to know about.
No, and I bet that
they didn't discuss it with us, and you know we didn't. We were just muttered amongst ourselves. Yeah, we're 14-year-old kids. We were telling tall tales right and left about it.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine.
I mean, you know, to us that was. Best thing since bread and butter, for crying out loud.
And the scoutmaster was probably petrified.
You know, we were. It, far as we knew, we had just seen Bigfoot or UFO. It was everything to us, you know.
Sure, sure.
We were making up all kinds of crap at that particular time.
That's
but for me, I wanted an answer. I wanted an explanation because I was sitting out there with the damn thing. To put it bluntly, I mean it. it was very real. I was there.
Right.
These guys had their faces pressed up against a piece of screening. Right. I was sitting there. I was sitting there naked as a jaybird. Nothing, you know, nothing but my skin on, and this creature right there.
Yeah.
You know, just a few yards away from me, and I was not a happy camper.
I can imagine. I wouldn't be either. We're talking to Dr. Ed Kraft, the original anomalist. We're going to take a break about 5 minutes or so. Is everybody in the chat room? Ed, you are in the chat room too, aren't you?
I am in the chat room, and it's a busy one. A lot of great folks out there. Big hello to everyone in the chat room too, by the way.
Great. If you have any questions, just you can either fire them to Ed in the chat room or to hear Sarah Jane, and we'll ask it over the air if you want. But stay tuned. We'll be back in about 5 minutes, so don't go away.
For the latest news in the paranormal world, listen to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio live on Para X every Friday night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. London time. That's 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern.
Hey, what's up? This is Gwen speaking for Ed. Give up the keys. Choose a designated driver. Music lives. So should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
This is the Para-X Radio Network.
When a child is abducted, every second counts.
That's why this station uses the Internet Radio Amber Alert System,
helping to keep your children safe. A free service of the Internet broadcasting community and this station.
All right, we're back. This is Gil for Soul Seekers Radio. Sarah Jane's in the chat room. Dr. Ed's in the chat room. Ed, are you back with us?
I am back with you.
Great. I know that you're a man of science, as you mentioned before. Can you tell
us? I like to think so.
And you have a doctorate's degree. Can you tell us what your doctorate's in and how it's played a role in your investigations of phenomena?
Okay, well, that's a tricky subject. And that's one I like to use. I like to play off of that, actually. It's actually an honorary doctorate.
Oh, is it?
And I like to use that in conversation. That's why I do put it up there, because it is an honorary doctorate. Okay, and I use it because it piques people's interest.
Sure.
All right? And it's not a scientific doctorate at that. It's a doctorate of divinity.
Is it?
Divinity is based on belief.
Right.
Okay, so I use that to bring up the topic of belief versus the scientific method.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I put it out there. And I love to bring that up when I do interviews and things, because people say, they hear that word doctor and they automatically think, wow, you got to know something. You know what? No, I got a crackerjack degree, but people will sit there and listen to me just because I stick that out there. Isn't that amazing how gullible people are?
It is.
They will listen to you just because you have that in front of your name.
Hopefully all our listeners will still stay tuned.
Well, I think that just goes to show you, though, and it's a good point to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't believe everything you hear or see, people. Take the time to investigate it yourself.
Sure.
Okay?
You're rather a skeptical person, aren't you?
No, I'm a practical person.
Right.
I'm a logical person, and that's what science is all about.
Mm. Exactly.
Okay? Science is about applying the law of parsimony,
mm-hmm.
or Occam's razor to everything we do. And that means when we are presented with two opposing options, okay, conclusions to the same scenario, right. All right, we take the one that leaves us with the least point of resistance.
Right.
In other words, when we hear hoofs, we don't automatically think zebras. We should be thinking horses.
Right.
All right. That's essentially what it means. If we go hearing, hoofs off in the distance, we shouldn't be thinking zebras firsthand.
Right.
We should be thinking horses.
Right.
But what do most investigators in this field do? They automatically think, ooh, ghost, or ooh, UFO alien, or ooh, Bigfoot.
Right.
Instead of thinking the most logical things first.
Right.
Rule out the obvious before you go to the extreme.
Exactly.
And that is what I do. And that's practical. I'm not saying these things don't exist.
Mm.
But I'm saying we have to be practical first. So,
sure.
No, I'm not a skeptic. Okay? And I'm not a debunker.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a believer. I'm a researcher. And as such, I have to apply the scientific method and be practical in it. And that requires that I use Occam's razor and the scientific method.
Right.
In all of my research.
That's good.
And that means using common sense first.
That's the way it should be.
Not jumping to conclusions.
That's the way it should be. You and I were talking before we came on air about ghost hunting, and I had asked if you have done a lot of ghost hunting, and I'll let you explain to the audience, but, you know, like we were talking about, so many groups that have come out now because of whether it's the television shows that are out there now, but, you know, there are so many that just jump straight to the conclusion that it's paranormal, you know, when it more than likely has a logical explanation to it. And one of the reasons that you haven't done a lot of the ghost hunting lately is because teams don't research and have a scientific approach like they should.
Right. I mean, they just doesn't seem that today, groups are a dime a dozen,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine and that's good, but people don't take the time, for instance, to understand their equipment.
Right.
Okay, I'm seeing a lot of that. They're not taking the time to really I was doing an interview one time, and I'll just use this as an example. I won't name names or anything here, but I was actually giving an interview, and I asked the individual, "Well, what is a K2 meter used for?"
Right.
Well, we see it used on television, and the reply I got from the individual who was the host is, "I use mine for a dowsing rod."
That's
okay.
Sad, really.
But that didn't answer my question. What is its purpose? What is it? What is a K2 meter designed for?
Mm-hmm.
Who, the inventor of this device, what did they design it to do?
And their answer?
I use mine for a dowsing rod. And that is what I am talking about here. That individual clearly had no clue what the intended purpose of that tool was.
And you think a lot of the groups out there now, it's the same for them.
It is, you know, it is. They see it used on television, or they see it out somewhere, and instead of taking the time to contact the manufacturer, you know, all you have to do is look at the manufacturer standards or something, find out what this tool is designed to do.
Right.
Most people aren't aware that K2 meter is a gauze meter.
Right.
Okay, and a gauze meter picks up electromagnetic fields.
Right.
And when it does pick up a magnetic field, it's a magnetic field detector.
Right.
When it picks up a magnetic field, it gives off an electric impulse.
Mm-hmm.
So by its very nature, if you use a K2 meter around EMF meters,
mm-hmm.
it is going to set off every EMF meter around it because it gives off its own electronic signal.
Right. Now, there are a lot of groups
out. So people are running around with K2 meters right next to EMF meters wondering why the EMF meters are going off. And they have no clue that it's the K2 meter setting them off.
There are a lot of groups that do know what they're doing, though, as far as their equipment.
Exactly. And that's well and good. But the point I'm trying to make is there are too many out there that don't.
Right.
At that time.
Right.
And that's what scares me. And, you know, it doesn't scare me. It's just that there are too many, there are serious researchers and there are thrill seekers.
Sure, exactly.
And that's always going to be the case. And that's fine and good. I'm all, you know, hey, if there are thrill seekers, there's always going to be thrill seekers, and that's fine and good. My thing is, I just had rather not be in the midst of all of that when I'm trying to do serious research.
Right.
So I try to steer clear of that end of things because I think it interferes with the research I'm actually doing.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is the cryptozoology, correct?
No, actually, a lot of what I do is the cryptozoology, but also the ufology,
right.
UFO research.
Let's talk a bit about the UFOs then. Have you ever experienced or seen one?
I have seen lights that are unexplainable.
Which would be unidentified.
Right. There are, by definition, they are unidentified flying objects. So by definition, yes, UFOs.
And what about alien abductions? What do you think about that?
Now, that's an interesting phenomenon. The alien abduction phenomenon is an interesting one. There was some research done that actually carries over, can carry over to ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
This carries over to ghosts. The near-death experience, and one particular type of alien abduction phenomenon, which is the sleeping phenomenon. This is where people claim to be abducted in their own homes.
Right.
When they're sleeping and so forth,
mm-hmm.
which have been tied into sleep paralysis and so forth. But
right.
There's some research done by Dr. Michael Persinger,
mm-hmm.
in which his God helmet, as it's been labeled, but this actually relates to EMF waves and sensory deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
And he conducted it at Laurier University, and I believe it was in Ontario, Canada. I'm not certain if it's Ontario where Laurier University is located, but I'll have to check the fact on that one.
Okay.
But I know he did his research with the helmet, and what they did was they bombarded the temporal lobe of the brain with EMF waves.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to recreate, the more they increased the EMF waves in that region of the brain,
right.
they were able to simulate alien abduction scenarios, near-death experiences, and so forth in these subjects.
No kidding.
Also, they followed up later on with a individual, a little girl's mother contacted them, contacted Persinger and his students, and she had been injured. She had an injury, a head injury, and it had affected her temporal lobe.
Hmm.
So what they did was they went in, and she was seeing, she was claiming she was being sexually assaulted at night by this little creature that was coming in and attacking her and sitting on her shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to almost like an alien visitation.
Right.
Or a succubi incident or incubi incident at night, being attacked physically by a demonic entity.
Right.
And what they found was that within 10 inches of her head was a clock that was putting out EMF waves. When they removed that, every time they, that was the only thing they, the constant factor that kept changing.
Right.
And every time they removed it, the episodes would stop.
Hmm. I've heard that before. I heard even lamps, you know, if you're sitting close to a lamp, it can cause irregularities in your thought process and your brain waves and your thinking.
There was a further study done in which they actually, it was there in England somewhere, over there where you are,
mm-hmm.
where they followed up further with this and created an actual ghost house.
Mm-hmm.
I have to look up the study again as far as which actual students did it. But they carried over with Persinger's work and put EMF meters in the wall, not meters, but devices in the wall. And they also did ultra-low frequency sound wave creators in the wall, these devices that put out ultra-low wave noisemakers
right.
in the walls of this haunted room. And they put the subjects in there in low lighting situations. And they created this haunted room. And most of these subjects claim they experienced ghostly phenomenon inside.
Interesting.
So, the alien abduction phenomenon, is it real?
Hmm.
I have my doubts as far as those bedroom scenarios.
Right.
Where, you know, the aliens come in, they take people out of their bedrooms, and they put them right back where they are.
Right.
I'm beginning to... I've been looking at a lot of this research on this temporal lobe phenomenon and the EMF waves, and I'm starting to see a lot of correlations with that portion of the brain may be playing a key role with that. But I do think there may be something to, when you have cases like the Betty and Barney Hill case, where right. they are actually physically missing time involved,
right.
and you have physical trace evidence where you have, you know, a clock. Betty has a, for instance, rather not a clock, but a star chart
right.
that she describes. The woman has no clue or education in astronomy, yet she can draw out a star chart, which astronomers at the time don't even recognize.
Hmm.
Yet, 10 years down the road, an astronomer comes forward and says, uh-oh, this is a real location out in space.
No kidding.
Unless she time-traveled forward and figured that out.
Right.
You know, I mean, she was able, and she had no knowledge of stars. You know, that right there is a big mystery, how this woman... Number one, Betty and Barney Hill were racial activists
right.
at a very, you know, critical point in American history in which racial activism was a hot topic.
Sure.
So they didn't really want to draw attention to themselves because they were an interracial couple.
Right.
And very active in their community. So they really didn't want the negative press as being UFO nuts. That was the last thing they wanted.
But they did get labeled that, didn't they, in the...
Exactly. Well, actually, no, they were very respected members of their community. So, you know, they really, did, that's not press they wanted.
Right.
They eventually did, yes. But, so, that was a lot right there. Then you have a case like the Travis Walton case.
Mm-hmm.
Here are several individuals who pass polygraph tests. And then, they're actually fixing, they're going to take these guys, they're getting ready to try these guys for murder in Travis Walton.
Right.
You know? Hey, where's the body?
Right.
You know, what did you do with this guy up in the woods? Where did you leave his body?
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, poof, here Travis shows up, and he's backing these guys up.
Is that the case in Arizona?
Right, and they want his body.
Right.
And all of a sudden, Travis shows up, and he's saying, look, they beam me up, Scotty. And the guys saw it all, they witnessed it all, and they're all passing the polygraph test.
Well, the way I...
And you've got several eyewitnesses to the event. You actually have sure. eyewitnesses to this event where he's up he goes.
Right.
To verify Travis's story. You have eyewitnesses to actually what happened to him. And just nobody's believing him.
Right.
Nobody's believing them. And then he shows back up again.
Right.
Now, that says a lot right there. So you have two cases that I think are the real type of alien abduction mm-hmm. versus this other sleep type phenomenon, which I really do think has something to do with the temporal lobe of the brain and this EMF phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So I think there are two totally separate phenomena occurring.
I see. Now, the way I look at it, I mean, statistically, I find it hard to believe that we're the only intelligent civilization in, you know, the vast universe and galaxies. To me, there's got to be other life out there, other intelligent life.
Well, you obviously haven't driven on I-95 lately.
That was bad back then when I was there.
that's a whole other ballgame, too. But that aside, there's a lot of interesting points that you make there. Yes, the odds are there is life out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a given.
Sure.
There are a lot of problems with that, however. Okay.
Okay.
The problem is getting to it or it getting to us.
Mm.
And that is where the problem comes up.
Well, then you get into the quantum physics, don't you? And
right. This is where the problems are created. It is trying to get there. We have to overcome a lot of things
sure.
to get from point A to point B.
Sure.
You know, you have to start looking at the fact that, you know, we are not designed to travel through space.
Right.
And anybody who's going to be able to survive here or come here is going to be very similar to us.
Mm-hmm.
Logically speaking, we have to overcome the asteroids or asteroids and all kinds of things out in space, radiation, heat.
Sure.
So anything that's going to travel our way is going to have to overcome those obstacles.
Oh, sure.
And chances are they're not going to be able to any more than we are. So what better way to do that, of course, is going to be just like we are with sound waves and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably not going to happen anytime soon.
Right.
So let's look at, first of all, let's take a step back and let's look at the types of civilizations that are out there, okay? If we're going to look at it, let's look at it in terms of civilizations
okay.
that would be out there, okay? There are basically three types of civilizations,
mm-hmm.
okay, terrestrial civilizations. Or in this case, extraterrestrial civilizations.
Right.
You've got three basic types, okay? You've got type one, which is going to be a harvested, or they're going to be those who have harvested some type of planetary power. And I'm talking in terms of weather.
Right.
So they're going to have harvested their own natural resources, weather, hurricanes and volcanoes, and they're going to control all of that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, they're natural resources on their planet. They're going to be able to control the oceans and the waves, all of that.
Okay.
All right? And then you're going to have a type 2 planet, and this is going to be a stellar planet. They're going to have exhausted all of their resources on their own planet.
Mm-hmm. Just like we're
and
doing.
They're going to get their power directly from their mother stars. This is going to be, the yellow star, their twin stars even. If they come from a planetary system that has two stars, twin stars,
mm-hmm.
They're going to get their power directly from that. Okay?
Okay.
They're going to be that's where their power is going to come straight from.
Right.
And that's going to be a stellar planetary system. All their energy is going to come from that, directly from their sun. All right? And they're already going to have exhausted the power of their own planet. They're just going to draw it straight from that.
Right.
That's a type 2 planet. Now, the next type, a type 3 planet, is going to be galactic, okay? Mm-hmm. They're going to be harnessing the power of billions of stars.
Okay.
All right, they're going to be basically a galactic civilization. And to kind of break these civilizations down better for you, it's more of, let me see, looking at a Buck Rogers type of situation with a type 1. If you look at, remember the old Buck Rogers series?
Sure.
Okay, that would be a type 1
civilization,
okay? And then if we moved up, we could go to, say, Star Trek.
Okay.
That would be a type 2 civilization. Okay?
Gotcha.
With your travel back and forth and your, you know, what is a Federation of Planets.
Right.
Then you go into your Star Wars, where you're traveling great distances and across galaxies, in a galaxy far, far away.
Right.
Okay, that's your type 3. Okay, civilization. Okay. Now, we here on Earth, and anyone trying to really contact us, is going to be a type 0. We are a type 0.
Okay.
That's where we fall on that scale.
Huh.
We're not even able to contact anyone out there. Anyone who's going to be trying to contact us, do you really think they're going to waste their time with a type 0?
You wouldn't think so.
Okay. That's first and foremost. If there's a civilization out there that is a type 3, a type 1, they're going to be wanting to contact a type 1.
Sure.
They're not going to be sitting back trying to contact the type 0.
Right.
Okay, they're going to go for a type 1 or above.
Right.
So until we hit type 1, no one out there is going to try to contact us.
That's interesting.
We're not going, think about it. There's no point in it. Because we don't have the means to communicate back with them.
Right. You don't think they'd want to travel here to find out?
There's no point to it.
You don't think?
Because they know we don't have the means or the resources to communicate back with them.
Mm-hmm. So if there are, in fact, abductions that do take place here, you know,
it's for their own study or their own purposes.
Okay, I gotcha.
I mean, that would be the logic behind that.
Right.
There would be no point to interfere or do anything else at this point. There would be no need to give us a nudge or anything else because it would be pointless. Whatever it is, it would be for their own purpose, their own study, or whatever.
Right.
No point to give us a nudge. I mean, they realized it. You know, we're on the verge of it. And believe it or not, we will probably be, at the rate we're going right now, mm-hmm. I would say another 100, 150 years, we'll probably enter that point, you know, where we will hit a type 1 civilization.
Think so.
We're on the verge of it right now. If you look at the government's project, which is allegedly declassified,
mm-hmm.
the HART program, the High Altitude Atmospheric Research Program,
right.
Up in Alaska,
mm-hmm.
They're bouncing radio waves off of the ionosphere.
Right.
That's has to do with weather and weather controlling.
Right. Yeah,
so I would say we're not far off. I say give us another 100 years and, you know, we'll be a type 1. We're on the verge. We're almost there. So if they're going to start coming, you know, now's a good time.
No, we have been
kind of bridging that gap. Yeah, now's a good time to start trying to bridge that gap or start looking into it. They may be checking us out for that purpose.
Sure.
But they're not going to make actual contact anytime soon, no.
Because we've been trying to make contact for years now with sending the radio signals out, haven't we?
Right. And if they were going to do it, they wouldn't come here again. They've got to overcome those obstacles.
Sure.
So you have these little grays that people see.
Right.
And I think that's the perfect space traveler. They always report they have no sexual organs.
Right.
They have huge eyes.
Right.
Well, they have small mouths. Well, obviously, they're not geared to eat. They have small mouths.
Some say they have no mouths.
Exactly. And they have no. Obviously, they report they have no sexual organs, so they seem to be asexual.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the sexual tensions to worry about on long space trips, male and female. They don't obviously have any poop chutes, so they're not depositing anything. Nothing in, nothing out.
True.
Can you think of a better space traveler?
No. Now that you
mentioned
it.
And so if they're not male, they're not female, they're not sitting there arguing, screaming at each other for long distance. I know you put a man and a woman in a room too long, they're going to kill each other. Especially if they're traveling light years.
We're talking to Dr. Ed Kraft.
That's my wife.
True. Dr. Ed Kraft, the original anomalous. We're going to take another break, and when we get back, we're going to continue talking about UFOs and a little bit about Roswell. So everybody in the chat room, all our listeners, please stay tuned. Don't go away, and we'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Check out our website at soulseekers.org.uk.
Hi, this is Ozzy Osbourne. For many years, you know I've had a drink problem and I'm trying to battle that problem every single day. But one thing I don't do, I don't drive my car when I'm drinking. I get someone to drive me. Do not drink and drive. It's the stupidest thing. If you drink, just don't drive. Not only are you going to hurt yourself, you may hurt some other person, and you wouldn't want that on your conscience, would you?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
For the latest news in the paranormal world, listen to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio live on Para X every Friday night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. London time. That's 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern.
When a child is abducted, every second counts.
That's why this station uses the Internet Radio Amber Alert System,
helping to keep your children safe. A free service of the Internet Broadcasting Community and this station.
This is the Para-X Radio Network.
Thank you.
We're back. You're listening to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio. I'm Gil, your host. We're speaking with Dr. Ed Kraft, the original anomalist, and we're going to continue speaking about UFOs. You back with us, Ed?
I'm right here with you, Gil.
Great, great. Thanks again for being with us tonight.
Glad to be here.
Now, I understand you've interviewed quite a few UFO witnesses. Which do you personally think was the most interesting that you've interviewed? Or who, I should say.
Well, there's quite a few that are interesting for different reasons. One that comes to mind, I can tell you right off the bat, one that's a very interesting individual, is, of course, Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr. was a very interesting individual in and of himself. The reason being is because he had an opportunity to do what few people, actually no one that I know of, aside from his father, who is now deceased, touch the actual debris from the Roswell crash.
Right. And you said he's the son of Major Jesse Marcel. He was the intelligence officer.
That's correct.
Right.
Right. Dr. Jesse Marcel is actually colonel. Is a colonel, retired colonel himself, in the military. He actually retired four times from the service.
Oh, really?
He's a flight surgeon. He's also a flight surgeon. So he's a very intelligent man. He's no idiot. They called him back into service three times, and he did serve. So he's no idiot.
Uh-huh.
He knows what he is talking about. He's a flight surgeon. He's a very intelligent man. And at the time of Roswell, he was actually a very familiar with things like balsa wood, because back in that day, you know, children didn't have plastic models like, you know, when we were kids.
Right.
They had models that you glue together and things like that were made out of plastic. But in his day, they had to carve them out of balsa wood with a little pocket knife.
Right.
And he would carve these balsa wood airplanes and things. So he knew what balsa wood was. The kid used it every day. I say kid. He was a kid at the time.
Sure.
But so, you know, he knew what balsa wood was. And that's and he knew what the aluminum foil was that the alleged radar reflectors were made out of, because it's the same stuff that chocolate candy bars are wrapped in. It still is the same stuff that Hershey bars are wrapped in today.
Sure.
Okay, any kid knows what a candy bar wrapper is.
Right.
Trust me. Okay, it's just a fact of life.
Right.
So he knew what those things were, and to this day he had a replica made of the actual I-beam that he handled as a child, and I have tried and I have conducted experiments based on the description that he gave me and the photo of the I-beam that he sent me of the replica, and it has the drawings on it of the hieroglyphics, or what he calls hieroglyphics,
right.
Best word he can use to describe it. And I tried to compare that to what is in the official U.S. government document. Okay, Roswell case closed.
Okay.
Now keep in mind, this is taxpayer dollars. This thing's the size of a phone book, a Los Angeles phone book, for crying out loud. It's over 1,000 some odd pages.
Huh.
It's a huge, I mean, it's the size of a phone book.
Right.
And it doesn't, that's the first one, let me say that. That's the first final explanation. The first final explanation. The second one was shorter. It was only like, 300 pages? But the first final explanation
okay,
is that huge. And, but in it, it tells us that the tape that was used on the weather balloons and the radar reflectors was a type of Scotch tape that had these purple designs on it. It was used, made by a toy manufacturer.
Uh-huh.
And it was 1 inch in width. Yet Jesse's I-beam is only a quarter inch in width.
Huh.
So what I did was I took that I-beam, I mean that the design that they show in the documents.
Right.
Okay. And I took that and I cut it into quarter inch strips.
Okay.
And I tried to superimpose those quarter inch strips over Jesse's I-beam.
Right.
And no matter how I patterned them on there, they did not fit the hieroglyphics did not fit.
Hmm.
I could not make that, you know, those quarter-inch strips of that
tape
design. Make those, they didn't match any of those designs.
Right.
There was no way to make them fit. Absolutely no way did they fit.
So the government was claiming it was the tape. That
it was the tape, exactly. And there was no way for that tape design to match those. I mean, they weren't even the same size. The images on that tape were three times the size of that those hieroglyphics on Jesse's quarter-inch I-beam.
Interesting.
They were not even in the ballpark.
Huh.
Even when you cut them into quarter-inch strips and tried to superimpose them over onto it,
right,
you cannot do it.
Hmm.
You cannot do it. So whatever was there was not what, even in the official explanation, still wasn't right.
Right.
It still, the evidence still did not match.
What other information did he give in his interview that you have with him?
Well, I can tell you this. Now, one thing I did find odd was that to this day, there are still a lot of witnesses who claimed, who still claim that they were harassed and told not to talk about the incident,
sure,
something bad would happen to him, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And I have also talked with other witnesses, including Jesse, who say they were never threatened at all. They were just said, don't talk about this, or you will lose your pension, or from the military end of things.
Right.
The military claimed they weren't threatened at all. They were just said, look, it's your pension.
Right.
And that's what most military individuals who were involved with it, that's all they were afraid of. They didn't want to lose their pension.
Sure.
And their benefits. Whereas the civilians were claiming, oh, well, they're going to kill us.
Right.
But all the military people, including Jesse Jr., say, look, we were never threatened in any way. It was just a matter of, hey, we don't want to lose our pensions here.
It's still a threat of sorts.
What's interesting is that the Secretary, I believe the Secretary of the Navy or Secretary of Air Force, has released everybody of their obligations on that now. It's been declassified.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can talk about it at this point. Free and clear.
Has anybody said something since it's been declassified to substantiate?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. There's actually a very credible witness, Eli Benjamin, came forward and talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things about Eli Benjamin is there is Glenn Dennis is one of the witnesses who came forward to mention alien bodies. And Glenn Dennis is known as the, he wasn't military, but he came forward to talk about it. And he's known as the mortician.
Mm-hmm.
Claimed he saw the bodies there at the hospital and told the story about the nurse, the missing nurse, the one that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And the government goes to use him in their case to say, look, this is all hoax. The nurse never existed. Here's the evidence. And they specifically use Glenn Dennis to discredit that whole story.
Hmm.
However, Eli Benjamin is a military man, and he did come forward with his story.
Right.
And they never misuse him in their case.
Huh.
But after Glenn Dennis found out that he wasn't going to lose his pension because he was released from his obligation, he came forward to tell his story.
Hmm. Interesting.
And he told the story, which did mention that he actually handled one of the litters, the gurneys, rather a litter from the field, and actually loaded one of those bodies onto one of those trucks to take them to the hospital.
No kidding. Now, one's claimed, I've heard one's claimed to be at CENTCOM in Tampa, and the other one's supposed to be at Area 51.
But the locations, no. To be honest with you, I'm going to tell you, if there's anything out there to be held, I'm going to bet you 10 to 1, any debris, anyway, any technology that went anywhere, it did, from my research, as far as the craft goes, any recovered crafts went straight out to Wright-Patt, Ohio.
Right.
Because that's foreign technologies.
Huh.
And that's what's known as Hangar 18. Now, there's a Building 18, but it would have been Hangar, Building, I believe it's 21 or 24, which is right next door to Building 18.
Uh-huh.
And that would have been where it was, and it would have been underground there.
Huh.
And that's what's known as the Blue Room.
Oh, is it?
And that's the Foreign Technologies Division.
Oh, interesting.
That's where it would have actually been sent.
Now, you have quite an extensive background in the military also, don't you?
I have a background in the military, yes.
Yeah. And what is your take on the whole Roswell? Do you think it did happen and they just covered it all up? Or?
Oh, Roswell, there's definitely a cover-up.
Right.
I don't doubt that for a minute. And the truth is not what it's said to be.
Right.
There, yes, something occurred at Roswell, and to this day, it's still being covered up. But they can't come forward and say, even after they've released all this information,
right,
they still cannot come forward and say what happened. Because too many politicians that still are out there are still alive.
I see.
Okay, you can't go forward and say, I was involved in this cover-up.
Sure.
Yet I'm going to run for office next year.
Right. Right.
I mean, think about it. It's not going to work very well.
Right. They still got to cover their butts, don't they?
And, you know, somebody else down the line is still... So you're going to have... was involved in this cover-up for covering up for that person. So the cover-up, it's a never-ending cycle now.
Sure. Sure.
It's gone on too long. It's a part of American history. This is one that's going down in the books. It's like JFK. Who killed JFK?
Right.
You're never going to get the answer to that one.
Sure.
You can write it off the books.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just going to be blunt about it. You're not going to get the answer because too many politicians have had their hand in that kitty, and it's not. You're never going to see the answers to that. That one's going to be covered up, and, you know. You're not going to see the answer to it.
At the time, why do you think they covered it up at the time? You don't think the public could handle the truth?
You can't handle the truth.
Exactly.
No, I really, to be honest with you, I don't. I think it was a. I don't think they knew what they were dealing with.
Right.
Based on the evidence that I saw, I think it scared the hell out of them, to put it frankly. I don't think the right hand knew what the left hand was doing.
Right.
And based on the history that I tracked down on it, nobody knew what anyone else had.
Hmm.
If you look back, well, let's go back to 9/11 and what happened within each branch of the government. From the CIA to the FBI, each branch wanted to know what was going on.
Right.
And that's why we came up with Homeland Security.
Right.
Okay? To bring everybody together. Well, back then, it was even worse.
Mm-hmm.
J. Edgar Hoover wanted it and couldn't get his hands on it.
Right.
We have actual declassified documents now through Freedom of Information Act where J. Edgar Hoover wanted to get his hands on that on some of that debris and find out what was going on, and he was fighting tooth and nail to find out what was going on. So each agency was trying to cover up what was going on to keep it from the other one. They wanted the technology.
Right.
Before you knew it, it was buried so deep in red tape that nobody knew what was going on. And that's exactly what I think happened.
Yeah.
I think it got buried amongst its own bureaucracy and before the public even knew about it. By the time it was released, they were already covering it up from each other.
Right.
That's honestly, I really do think it turned into its own self-fulfilling nightmare.
Jeez.
I don't think anyone, even at the top, knew what was going on.
It's the American way.
And exactly. I'm going to be honest. I really don't think... I think now they go back and they look and they say, okay, well, now it's too late to do anything about it, but what's done is done.
What do you think about, you know, there's a lot of theories that some of our technologies that we have today were taken from alien spacecraft or alien technology. Do you think that's the case?
I think that is a discredit to a lot of hardworking individuals and scientists who actually did work on things like lasers. The technology was actually in the works long before the Roswell crash on things like lasers and you know, Velcro, things like that. A lot of the technology existed far prior or long before that.
Right.
It was in the works at the time. If you go back and you do look at what was in the works in universities and so forth, you will see that these people were already working on this stuff. Okay, people take the time.
Sure.
A lot of people who are enthusiastic about this stuff say, oh, no, it came right off of there. Go look at fiber. It was already in the works, in development.
Right.
And a lot of these universities, and these bright kids and students were working, putting their lives into this work.
Right.
And I think it's a disservice to say, oh, well, E.T. gave it to us because we recovered it from a crash.
That's what they say. Microwaves, Velcro, things like
that. And it really is. And a lot of people put their lives into this work. So to say that we got it all from that from crashes and stuff, I think really, really is a discredit and a disservice to the people who gave it, really did the work for us. And you know, it's like Nikola Tesla taking away all the work that he did, you know. He didn't get the credit when he was alive for the work, for what we have now.
Right.
And by saying that we got all of the stuff like fiber optics and stuff from aliens takes a lot of it away from the people who actually did give it to us.
Right. Right. Now, I've driven between Las Vegas and Reno quite a few times. I used to do it on a regular basis. And I've seen some strange things in the sky, but, you know, I don't put it down to UFOs. I just put it down to military experiments and you know, new developments and things like that. One of the things I did see driving one night is a huge triangular-shaped object, which you hear a lot of people reporting, you know, all over the place as UFOs. But then, and it was moving real slow, real quiet, because I even pulled off the road. But then all of a sudden, two or three fighter jets came screaming up and flying right alongside of it, and they all just sped off. So, you know, I was pretty certain it wasn't anything unidentified at all. It was just some new military craft that they're testing out up there.
There's been some interesting footage lately of a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you on that one. They're definitely testing something.
Sure.
And there's been rumors of this Aurora spacecraft,
mm-hmm.
or this Aurora craft. So I wouldn't for a minute doubt there is something flying around out there. But, you know, look at the stealth bomber and
sure.
stealth fighter and things like that. So, yeah, I'm sure there's something out there. But what it is, I don't really want to know because I'm not supposed to know, and I'm sure it's for our benefit. So.
Oh, yeah.
More power to them. I'm not gonna question it, and I'm not going to worry about it. But that kind of thing, I feel secure in knowing that it's there, whatever it is.
Do you think a lot of the...
As long as it's not shooting anything down at the ground at me, I'm fine with it.
Do you think a lot of these reported sightings are actually military?
I think a vast majority of them are. Yeah. You see, that's another thing. I know that a lot of this stuff has to be,
mm-hmm.
To be blunt. But it's not that percentage that I'm, you know, there's a huge percentage that is misidentification of natural phenomenon and military craft. Okay, mm-hmm. that comprises the vast majority of UFO sightings. And that's not what I'm concerned with as an investigator. It's that teeny tiny percent that remains unexplained.
Right.
And that, for me, is what I seek answers to. That's the percentage of that I want to know. Because obviously, as I mentioned earlier, the distances to travel using conventional space travel
mm-hmm.
is just impossible. We cannot do that.
Right.
Okay, so how are they going to there's something going on there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and we've got these potential grays and things like that out there. I'm, you know, but there is a way to do that. You know, there is a way that, you know, conventional time space travel isn't really possible. Einstein is kind of shot that one down. We can't really go traveling through space conventionally.
Right.
It just isn't possible. So it's not possible for them to use it either.
So
that theory just doesn't work. The closer we get toward at as we reach the speed of light, the more fuel it's going to take for us to get there. The heavier we become, therefore, the more fuel we need.
Right.
So it's just not possible to travel using conventional space-time.
Right.
You know, it's just not going to happen. But there are alternate ways to do that, and that has to do with these parallel timelines or
right.
these parallel time-space lines
mm-hmm.
using alternate dimensions.
Sure.
And what we can do is we can actually basically... jump through parallel time space.
Mm-hmm. So do you personally believe that we've been visited by aliens from outside our solar system?
Well, I don't know necessarily that it would be outside our solar system, but it's outside our time space.
Right.
And, yeah, I think that could be possible. But now whether they're really aliens or are they alternate reality, alternate time space.
Right. And that's getting back.
That's where we can get really into some serious quantum physics and quantum theory here.
Right. I was just going to say that. So.
You know. So that's where we start talking about some theoretical physics and time travel as far as alternate realities go.
Right.
Because and that's what I think is more likely the possibility. You're talking about sliding.
Is that what they call it?
When we talk about sliding, you can overcome the typical time paradoxes and things that Einstein's theory limit us to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and now that overcomes it also overcomes the physical limitations of time space that we encounter, such as asteroids and the great distances of space. You know, as far as conventional space travel goes.
Right. Well, when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about the Bermuda Triangle. I wanted to bring up a point about Atlantis. I just saw a glimpse at something in the paper today, so we'll touch base on that. And we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Ed Kraft, the original anomalist. Sorry. Everybody stay tuned, don't go away, and we'll be back in about five.
Broadcasting live from London every Friday from 9 to 11 p.m., 4 to 6 Eastern, the Soul Seekers bring you the latest topics and most influential guests in the paranormal world right here on Para-X Radio.
This is James Riley from Ballistic Etna, and you are listening to the best in everything paranormal on Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio.
Check out our website at soulseekers.org.uk.
This is the Para-X Radio Network.
Morning, gentlemen. Want to hear our specials?
Sure.
First, we have the seafood special. It's been sitting around here for a week. We're known around these parts for our food poisoning.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. It's called A1C, a simple blood test that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. To find out more, go to www.diabetesa1c.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back. We're talking with Dr. Ed Kraft, the original anomalist. I'm Gil, your host with Soul Seekers Radio, broadcasting to you from England. We have a lot of listeners in the U.S., and that's where Dr. Ed is. Are you with us, Ed?
I'm right here with you, Gil.
Dr. Ed. It sounds good.
Sounds good anyway on paper, right?
So you're down in South Florida, I know, which is notorious for being a corner of the Bermuda Triangle.
Do you have any, that's correct.
Do you have any interesting stories or takes on what that might be?
Actually, there's something real interesting about it. If you were to take the Bermuda Triangle, mm-hmm. you know, it does sit on one of the deepest parts of the Atlantic Ocean.
Right.
There's the, I forget what trench it is. It's on tip of my tongue. It's the deep, it's something trench there, the Puerto Rican trench or the...
I'm not sure.
Oh, lordy, lordy. If I hadn't sat here, if I needed it, if I didn't need it, I could have rattled it right off. But there's a trench that runs there. It's the deepest part of the ocean, mm-hmm. the Atlantic. Anyway, it runs right through the center of it, ironically enough. And if you were to take a pencil, you could take a pencil, mm-hmm. and push it straight through the center of the Bermuda Triangle, and it was long enough to reach through the other side of the Earth, mm-hmm. it would come out directly in the center of the Dragon's Triangle.
I haven't heard of that.
Which is a duplicate section of water uh-huh. in the Sea of Japan, off the Sea of Japan, uh-huh. which has the similar phenomenon occurring in it. It's off the coast of Japan, and it is a similar stretch of triangular area of water that has similar phenomenon occurring in it.
Really? I haven't heard of that.
See, ships and planes go missing over there in Asia. And it's a similar patch of water, very much like the Bermuda Triangle. And if you were to draw stick that pin straight through the Earth, mm-hmm. it would be in the center of that, ironically enough. And there, it is the deepest point in the Atlantic Ocean
right.
that this, Bermuda Triangle sits in. And it's just kind of odd that those two are almost sitting on top of each other.
Do you think it may be...
So, I don't know
magnetic?
If there's a bottomless thing there, or this, but it's just kind of an interesting fact that they're almost sitting on top of each other on opposite poles.
Yeah, it is interesting. A lot of people or scientists believe it's, the gas is releasing bubbles to sink the ships. As far as the airplanes that have gone missing, it's hard to tell what would cause that, but...
And that's an interesting thing. You got the methane gas phenomenon, which would explain the ships.
Right.
That's another. Now, I did interview a gentleman sometime back who wrote a book. It's entitled The Fog, and it's not based on the movie, but it really has to do with the Bermuda Triangle. Mm-hmm. And he lives here in Florida, and what it happened was he was a pilot, and he's flying his little Cessna plane. And he encountered a fog that literally encircled his plane. It just came up out of nowhere and encircled his plane.
Mm-hmm.
And he claimed that somehow he barely got out of this fog. And he had all types of problems with his electronic equipment in his plane. His compasses went haywire.
Hmm.
And he had like a tunnel. As it was closing in around him, there was a slight tunnel for him to go through,
mm-hmm.
and that was his only out. He flew straight for that tunnel and escaped it. He claims that was the only way he escaped that thing. But by the time he had gotten out, a one-hour flight had taken him 3 hours.
Yeah, I think I've heard something about that, or maybe saw a documentary on something like that.
So, that to me, and he, lived to tell the tale.
Uh-huh.
So that is one individual who was able to sit down and tell his story as a witness to the event,
right.
as far as a pilot goes. But, to date, we still don't know what happened with, for instance, Flight 19.
Right.
They did recover a bunch of aircraft that were similar to those, but the flight numbers did not match.
Exactly.
And they were found north off the coast of Florida, further north on the Atlantic coast. But they did not match. The flight numbers did not match those of Flight 19.
Well, a lot of theories are that they just got lost, basically. You know, their bearings got mixed up, and you know, the Atlantic's so huge, you know, they could be anywhere.
So, as far as that one goes, the jury's still out for me. I know that the weather here is very unpredictable. Mm-hmm. At any given time, it's sunny and bright, and you can actually go sit on the beach and look out to sea. And I know you'll vouch for me on this one. You can sit on the beach and go look, and off at sea, you'll see a storm in the distance, and you can watch it sit there and rain in one spot, and it's perfectly clear, bright, and sunny in the next.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Off in the distance, or you can sit off and watch water spouts off the coast.
Sure.
And water spouts are tornadoes over water.
Right.
And it looks beautiful, and yet it's sunny, you know, off to the left somewhere, and off to the right you've got this tornado over water.
Right.
So there are all types of strange phenomena that are occurring, and these are natural phenomena. It's not strange, it's a natural phenomena.
Sure.
And anything can happen in a heartbeat. If you've ever been on a boat fishing, one minute the seas are calm and just nice as they can be. The next minute, all of a sudden, there's a storm brewing and the seas are just raging.
Right. Yep.
So, and down here in this particular area, anything is possible. And the same thing occurs in the Dragon's Triangle. Hmm. It is the same weather pattern.
Now, to me,
it is identical.
Yeah. To me, that would back up the theories, you know, that it's some natural occurrences and not unnatural or paranormal or phenomena, and a lot of people think it has to do with UFOs.
I have a little difficult time with that, because but you do have strange lights and things like that have been seen.
Right.
And you can even date some of that back to Christopher Columbus. Even in his log books, he reports seeing strange lights. But you also have to remember some of the strange lights were under the water. And those are, once they're under the water, they're known as USOs, or underwater submersible objects,
uh-huh.
Unidentified submersible objects. Now, there are several species of jellyfish that do phosphoresce.
Right.
And, you know, back in the day, you got to remember, Christopher Columbus was coming from strange places and seeing a lot of strange things. A bunch of guys, you know, been without women for a long time at sea, they start seeing pretty strange things when they're out there drinking their rum and
exactly.
Doing whatever it is they're doing on their ship. So, who knows, you know?
I saw an article in the paper. I didn't get to read it. I just sort of glanced over it. We were in the shop, and the page was open. And they've claimed to found the lost civilization of Atlantis, about 600 miles off the coast of Africa. Some satellite pictures of picked up some grid system that's underwater. Like I said, I didn't get to read it, just basically the headline in bold print, and I saw the picture. Do you have any ideas on Atlantis? You think it's just a legend?
I've not seen that particular article.
It was just today.
So I can't quote. What paper was it in?
I don't know if it was in the Daily Mirror over here or the Sun, but it was...
Okay, well, Mirror Sun says a lot right there.
Yeah. True.
That speaks volumes right there.
I'm not sure. I can't tell you what paper it was. The cover wasn't there. It was just open to a page. But
I can tell you that, I haven't read the article, so I don't know as far as that particular story. I'd hate to comment on it without reading it, but I will tell you my opinion on it, or
okay.
My thoughts on it.
Yeah.
I know there was some research done off the coast of Florida in between Cuba, mm-hmm. that there was some recent pyramids found, they claimed, off of there, and that the Cuban government wouldn't give them permission to go look, or, you know, that story kind of died down. My real thinking and theory is, if you look at the actual history behind it, off the coast over in, off the coast of Greece,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the... it's over by, I think it's where Troy was.
Right.
The island where the Minotaur supposedly was there.
Crete,
yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The Isle of Crete. There are a lot of similarities, and there's actually an island there where the surrounding is circular. The description, the island as it appears today, mm-hmm. and if you look at the geology... They've actually done satellite surveys, and you can see where the island has sunk below the water, mm-hmm. and there are underwater formations in rings,
right.
almost canal-like rings, which fit the description of the city of Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
The city itself has the white buildings, and I mean, to a T, it fits every description
right.
of Plato. And keeping in mind that at the time of Plato, that world, you know, that side of the world was pretty much the world.
Sure.
Okay, and it was a huge continent
right.
to them. I mean, continents, there are concepts of continents were different. At that particular time, the entire region was geographically larger. We had volcanoes that have changed, and earthquakes have changed that whole region. So, I believe that it is over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that probably is where we should be looking. If you look at Egypt, you will see on some of their hieroglyphs that there's a people similar to those described by Plato.
Right.
And at one point, you will see the conquest of what seemed to be Atlanteans.
Interesting. That backs up. We've had another guest on twice, Susan Schultz, a good friend of ours, and she gave us her take on Atlantis, and it's basically the exact same thing what you just explained also. Same area, same connections to the Egyptians and everything.
Dr. Shirley Andrews is also, she's a well-known archaeologist, and I've spoken with her many times, too. You might talk with her about that also. She's done a lot of research on Atlantis and has done a lot in that particularly with that area as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Where are some of the most unusual places you've visited since I know you've traveled quite extensively?
Teotihuacan was fun. Down in Mexico.
Uh-huh. For what
that was
reasons?
One of the more interesting places, because until I stood there on the Pyramid of Sun, uh-huh. I really didn't have an appreciation for just how incredible ancient peoples were. We tend to think of them as primitive.
Right.
But when you really see what they were capable of,
mm-hmm.
I stand in awe. You know, we think that mankind somehow has lost or gained in knowledge as we went along.
Right.
We like to think that we're technologically superior to our ancestors.
Sure.
Bull. You know, we never really lost anything. That's just it. We're using the same technologies. We're just improving, you know, upon a lot of it.
Right. Right.
We're using and applying the same old proven and tried methods that they had back then.
Yeah. It's amazing, really, if you look into it, the things that they accomplished back then.
So it's not really that amazing. We have the same brain.
True.
We had back then. That's just it.
You don't think we've evolved into more...
We have the same brain.
Yeah.
If you stop and think about it, the human brain was the same.
That's true. That's a good point. We just didn't have access to the tools and the machinery and things like that.
We just started, you know, some guy came up one day and said, oh, well, if I bend the stick this way, it'll work better.
Yeah. Or fine.
I mean, that made all the difference in the world.
If I roll this heavy weight on this round thing instead of the square one, it seems to move a bit better.
It was somebody just had a better idea.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the only difference in them and us. Somebody had a better idea.
You say Mexico. Any contact or involvement with the Chupacabra down there?
Oh, my buddy El Chupacabra. Gotta love him.
Yeah.
Actually, but you know, there's some interesting tales to tell about El Chupacabra. I love that little guy. He's one of my favorite cryptids of all the animals that I deal with as far as cryptids go. He's an interesting one. But let me take a step back because you mentioned Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go back in a little history with El Chupacabra.
Okay.
He's originally known as a goat sucker. And it's native originally to Puerto Rico.
Okay.
Okay, that's where this thing, little cryptid, first shows up, okay, on the map. As far as nationally or internationally, is Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And it's it was given its name. It surfaced first back around 1975 in a small town, the town of Moca, there in Puerto Rico. Uh-huh. And it's known as El Vampiro de Moca, the uh-huh. Vampire of Moca.
Huh.
And it was given its name by Silverio Perez, and he's actually a comedian.
Really?
He gave it his name, exactly. he was joking around, and a comedian named this thing. So a lot of people think this is a mysterious, long historical name, but believe it or not, it got its name from a comedian.
I'd say that's funny, but...
So that should speak volumes right there, you know? That says a lot about this little creature. And, you know, eyewitnesses started talking about this strange creature that was coming around about 4 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Bipedal creature now. This is a bipedal creature. It started out on two legs.
Right.
Right? About 3 to 4 feet tall, mm-hmm. gray in color. And it, you know, looked very similar to these little grays we were talking about earlier, these little gray aliens.
Right.
This is how this creature starts out publicly. And it's running around Puerto Rico. It's got its little sharp teeth and a row of spikes down its back.
Uh-huh.
And it has kind of a sulfuric odor to it, smell to it. And it starts sucking the blood out of goats and chickens.
Right.
You know, leaving two little puncture wounds on it. So that gets the name Vampire, El Vampiro.
Sure.
Of the little town of Moca. And eventually it starts being seen in other places. Then it moves over to other places in South America, in Central America.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden it takes on the appearance of a four-legged creature.
Right.
And now it's starting to look like a rabid dog or a coyote, you know, with mange.
Huh.
And that's exactly what most tested, believe it or not, have proven about the ones that are seen out here is, you know, and I've seen some of these animals. But as a vet tech,
right.
a retired vet, I can tell you flat out. That's what it is.
Right.
I've seen too many of these animals. I've looked at these animals. The skin scrapings on these animals, the DNA on these animals, there's without a doubt what's coming out of there. That's what those animals are.
Mm-hmm. What about out of Puerto Rico?
Now, that is another ballgame. There's no evidence. Nothing's been recovered out of Puerto Rico. That's just it. And the hair sample, there was actually an individual who came up with a hair sample, and it turned out to be his.
Oh, did it?
Now, there is one way to prove what's going on here.
Okay.
I'm not going to say it on the air, but I'm curious why no one has done it.
Huh.
Okay, and I'd love an invitation, because there's one way to prove this thing.
All right.
I'm convinced there's a way to prove this thing. If anybody would love to do this, invite me out, because I guarantee you I can prove or disprove the existence of this creature in a heartbeat, or at least get some good DNA off of it.
Okay.
So if anyone out there is listening, out in Puerto Rico, whatever, and you got a case, all I need is a body. I don't need the body of this creature. Just give me a victim.
They say it drains all the blood completely out of the...
Get me a victim. Give me a fresh victim.
Sounds rather morbid.
That's all right. All I need. You know, nobody's even looked at that though. Bottom line is nobody's even thought about it. You know, there's so many things that are overlooked. And one of the things about this particular creature in Puerto Rico, and this ties right back into the comment I made too earlier about these small grays,
mm-hmm.
is that Puerto Rico is also a hot spot. There's a government installation there, U.S. government installation there. As it is U.S. territory,
right.
So there is a government installation there. That this may be some type of government hybrid alien creature,
right?
Or it may be an alien itself, because there are a lot of UFO sightings out there, but they're not just UFOs. Okay, they are USOs. Now keep in mind, a USO, underwater unidentified submersible object, uh-huh. becomes a UFO once it leaves the water.
Right.
And there is a hot spot in the same, right there near this little town of Moca.
Hmm.
Is also a hot spot for USOs and UFOs.
Could it be?
And there is a military presence nearby also.
Government, government experience or experiments gone bad, maybe?
That is one of the theories.
Right.
That is a theory that has been presented, is that it may be some type of an ABE, or anomalous biological entity.
Hmm.
And there are advocates of that particular concept, and that is what they have labeled it, as an anomalous biological entity. And that it is some type of genetic mutant created by the military.
I see.
I, on the other hand, you know, hey, show me no money.
There's also,
you know, why hasn't, if they really wanted this thing, there's more than enough ways to capture this creature,
right?
You know, all they have to do, obviously, it likes chickens, it likes goats.
Sure,
wouldn't be too hard to bait it. They know what it eats.
You wouldn't think so, would you?
Exactly. You know, how hard could it be to catch a snake?
There's the New Jersey Devil too, which some people think is the chupacabra.
That I really have a hard, that's a whole other ball game in itself. That actually has a whole other legend and history behind it that doesn't even ring of the same tale or story.
Right.
There's more to that than just you know, the goat sucker myth and all that. And it doesn't even, if I recall correctly, that doesn't even have anything to do with sucking blood out of its victims and all of that. There are tales of it, and they've tried to tie the two together.
Uh-huh.
But that's where we start getting that whole area where people try to tie one cryptid creature to another because of similarities in appearance or rumored appearance.
Right.
And that's when those lines get blurred, and that's why we have to start applying science. That's where people throw away Occam's razor, going back to what we talked about at the very beginning of the show.
Right.
People start looking for zebras when they should be looking for horses to start with.
Right.
You know? And that's exactly what occurs here.
Good point. We've come full circle in this. While we've got just a couple minutes left, do you want to tell the listeners what you have coming up in the future and, you know, where they can find out more about you and what you do and your work?
Yes. I have the NorCal Paracon coming up in July of 2009. That's July the 17th through the 19th. And that's coming up in Monterey, California. People can find out about that. They can go to my website. Actually, they can just hit my MySpace page. That's the Original Anomalist.
Mm-hmm.
It's MySpace/ The Original Anomalist. And they can find out about that.
Okay.
I've got that coming up, and I'm going to be releasing, they can get my book, it'll be released there at the conference.
Oh, cool.
Been long awaited. Hoping I'll have the second one out in time for that, but I know the UFO book, the UFOs, the dossier, I'll be releasing that there at the conference, and I'm hoping the second will be ready in time. I'm just waiting to hear back from the publisher on it, is Mysteries and Monsters.
Oh, that sounds good.
So hopefully they'll both be out, but I know that UFO's dossier will be released there at the conference on the 17th of July. They're at beautifully haunted Monterey out in California.
Monterey.
And a lot of other great speakers will be there, too. I know that Serenity Moore will be there, and Brian Hornois from Ghost Hunters. Lloyd Auerbach will be there, Bill Bean.
Oh, great.
And a couple more. Just check it out. There's a website out there for it, and links are all right there on my page. So go check it out. And I think the Booth Brothers are going to be there. They're hosting. They're one of the sponsors.
Oh, are they?
So check that out.
Monterey is a great
place. Their videos and so forth. They're one of the sponsors. So
cool.
Be sure to check all that out.
Well, we really appreciate you having me on the show. We'd love to have you come back because there's a lot more things I wanted to ask you but just didn't have the time to.
Anytime.
And it's been a pleasure having you on. It's been very interesting and enlightening. We've been talking to Dr. Ed Kraft, the Original Anomalist, and you can find him on his MySpace, just MySpace/ The Original Anomalist, correct?
That's correct. Amy's got it up in the chat room for everybody, so
great.
They can just click on that too. So.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Ed, and thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next Friday. We've got John Temporilli and Robert Davis on once again, and they'll be talking about Peter James and the legend of Peter James, some of the evidence that he's caught with EVPs on the Queen Mary, and I believe Robert's just finished an investigation at Peter James' home. So you don't want to miss next Friday again, and we, like I said, we'd love to have you back on if you can find the time, Ed.
Anytime. I've loved it. I had a great time. You got some great listeners out there, and a big shout out to all those folks out there in the chat room. Thanks for being there.
Great. Thank you, and everybody, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Friday. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting live from London every Friday from 9 to 11 p.m., 4 to 6 Eastern, the Soul Seekers bring you the latest topics and most influential guests in the paranormal world right here on Para-X Radio.
This is the Para-X Radio Network.
Check out our website at soulseekers.org.uk.
This is James Riley from Ballistic Etna, and you are listening to the best in everything paranormal on Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio.
When a child is abducted, every second counts.
That's why this station uses the Internet Radio Amber Alert System,
helping to keep your children safe. A free service of the Internet Broadcasting Community and this station.